Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast, where we interview growers from all over the world, both beginners and experts, seeking to learn more about what they know about gardening and how they do things in their garden. What's up, everybody? If you that don't know me, my name is Chris, aka Mr. Grow It, and you're tuned into the Garden Talk Podcast. This is episode number 124. In this episode, I interview Luke McCallan. He is an active member of the gardening community and is big into growing organically. Keeping plants healthy throughout the grow is easier said than done, and in this episode, Luke reveals what he does in order to keep plants healthy throughout the entire grow cycle while using organic inputs. If you want to see short, bite-sized clips of these episodes, search Garden Talk Clips on YouTube. I also have a gardening channel where I have over 130 videos showing the plants that I've grown. I'll have both of those channels linked down in the YouTube description section below. One of my goals for this podcast is to bring free information about gardening to the general public. That being said, I'd like to thank the sponsors of today's episode who helped make that goal possible. Thanks to AC Infinity for sponsoring this episode. Check out their advanced grow kits, which include nearly everything you need to start growing indoors. They have several different size kits, and they all come with a grow tent, grow light, ventilation system, oscillating clip fan, a Controller 69 Pro, and so much more. Click the link in the description section below so you can learn more about their grow kits, and the discount code MrGrowIt15 works on both Amazon and their website, acinfinity.com. Stash Blend. Stash Blend is a 2-1-5 plant additive that can be used with synthetic bottled nutrients or in living soil systems. Simply mix half teaspoon of Stash Blend into a gallon of water, then water your plants with it. Ingredients include corn steep liquor, seaweed extract, humic acid, beneficial bacteria, silica, and mycorrhizal fungi. Check it out at stashblend.com, link in the description section below, and use the discount code THESTASH. And we are back. Welcome to the Garden Talk Podcast. Today I am joined with Luke McCallan. How are you doing today?
Good, good. How are yourself?
Doing good, man. Thanks for coming on, dude. You are all over Instagram, all over Twitch and YouTube in the chat, and you are a very active member of the community, I must say.
Yeah. It's been awesome to watch you guys, and you know, I'm new to social media. I started one in, I think, back in July, and I just started following all you guys that I watched on YouTube over the years, and just amazing the interaction and how, you know, alive the community was. It was really fun to be a part of, and you know, catch myself at work getting on the Instagram like, no, I'm at work right now. And so it's been awesome to watch.
That's cool, man. And you actually submitted some photography in for my book as well. And I think you had a picture or two in my newest book. So I want to thank you for submitting in the photography. And it was pretty cool to have you a part of the book.
Oh, man, it was an honor. When I got that message, I high-stepped it across the field to my partner, Matt. He works with me, and we're, you know, doing our thing on the side, and he just couldn't stop laughing because I high-stepped, Mr. Crow, it picked my pictures. So, no, it was awesome. So, and I appreciate it for letting me be a part of the whole process, and you got me the signed book, and I appreciate it. It was cool. Cool experience.
Man, no problem. So can you introduce yourself for the audience here? Tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got into gardening.
Yeah, so my name's Luke, and I've been around gardening my whole life. I always felt like I had a green thumb. My mom was always in the garden in the backyard making compost, and just watching her flip the pile and see the steam come off was just, it was crazy to see. And as I got older, you know, you had to find a job. So I got into landscaping. And I did that for several years. And my daughter, I had a daughter pretty young. I was about 20. And she was diagnosed with spina bifida and hydrocephalus. And I won't go too deep into that. But that kind of was like, okay, what can I do all for alternative medicine? Because they wanted to give her this, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm not a big pill guy. I think there's other alternative sources. So I started doing my research, and that's when I came across your channel and Jeremy's channel to Build a Soil, and I started reading more about gardening, and it was just a pipe dream at this time. I lived in Indiana, and I had a really good job, and I traveled for work nonstop. I still work there. My mom, a few years later, she passed of cancer, and she was always a big greenhead, so me and my buddy Matt, we grew up in diapers together. We just came up with a plan. We said, you know what, we're going to move to Michigan. We're going to do it. We're going to start our own CBD company, CBN, start learning how to garden and So we both moved to Michigan. I moved about a year and a half ago, and Matt followed me about 6 months later, and we just dove full head in. We went AC Infinity. I mean, we bought everything we could. We probably overdid it a little bit, but we wanted to do it right. I mean, it wasn't just growing the medicinal plant. We wanted more. We wanted to start our own thing, and we did. We just full-on went at it, and I tried the synthetic for a while. It didn't go so well just because of the traveling for work and, you know, staying up on top of the pH and, you know, the watering and the runoff. And so then I started switching to organics. And I thank Jeremy for his 10x10 channel. It changed the way I grow and how I think about life in general.
So would you say your style of gardening is fully organic? Are you indoors only? Are you doing outdoors as well? And are you in soil or cocoa or what?
I'm an indoor grower. Like, I'm in Michigan, so it's a little cold over here most of the year. But I'm a fully organic grower. I did the follow the Build a Soil Way path to the fullest. I love what they're doing over there. It just, for me, I needed more hands-off gardening. And with the organics and the larger volumes of soil, which I have two 60-gallon beds and a 30-gallon, so it allows watering to, I can space it out a little bit more and get away with a little bit less.
Yeah, and organics is really what I wanted to get into today with you. You know, you look at your Instagram and it's just fully organic and you see very healthy plants. And I think that's a great topic for today, which is organic gardening, keeping plants healthy. Easier said than done, right? I know when I first started growing organics, I didn't know that you had to keep the soil moist the entire time in order for that proper amendment breakdown. I wasn't told that. I was told, hey, add this fertilizer, top dress, just water it in. You're good to go. So I was still doing drybacks between waterings and found out that was a big no-no. I had deficiencies on the plants. And there are little things like that that you really have to abide by in order to make sure that your plants are healthy when growing with organic inputs. And so we're going to get into all of those things in this episode. I do want to start with container size because you mentioned you're in 260 gallons. And then you're in 130 gallons, so larger containers. Are they fabric pots? Are they plastic? Or what type of containers are they?
Yeah, they're the Grassroots fabric pots. It allows for breathing. It's got that liner down at the bottom, so you don't get so much runoff. It's been great to me. Having the larger volume of soil, you're able to have a bigger buffer. You're not worrying about pH, you know. You can follow a schedule, you cannot, you can water only. With that size and starting with a balanced recipe is the key, is balance. Then you can go less is more. You know, like me, I travel for work, so I don't do nothing but water only during the week. And on the weekends, I'll give it a treat or something. And because I'm in that larger volume of soil, I can get away with that, as long as the moisture is at the right level. Then I do cheat. I use the EcoWit soil meter, so it kind of gives me reads on my phone so I can relay to the wife, you know, hey, we need to water tonight, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it's often said that being in a larger container is easier when growing with organic inputs. I personally started out in I tried it in a 3 gallon and 5 gallon, and even put it in 1 gallon before, and just to try it and get some experience and see that it is a little bit more challenging than it is growing in a 7 gallon or 10 gallon is what I'm in now. I've got a couple beds, actually. I've got a 2x10 bed outdoors that I grow my vegetables in. Same exact living soil one that you have from Grassroots Fabric Pot. Those ones are awesome. I've got a bed that I'm getting launched up here. It's a 2x4 for a 2x4 grow tent bed. I'm not sure how many gallons are in there. Now, you said 30 gallons. Is that the one that's in your 4x4 but is actually a 3x3 bed?
No, the 30-gallon I have in my 3x3 tent, and it's just a round 30-gallon pot. And then I got the two 5x5 tents when I got the 3x3 grassroots beds in them. And those are the 60-gallon, the 3x3.
And then for your soil mix, right, what's in it? Like, what did you do to begin?
Well, I kind of cheated again. I went straight through Build a Soil, and I got their take-and-bake recipe. I said, if I'm going to do this, you know, not knowing much about organics at all, but, you know, I thought just kind of learn as I go. So I got the best balanced recipes, and that's what I've learned from watching the YouTube series. And it's great. It's the Classimate Coots mix, the artesian soil. It's got everything in it, your aeration. It's the 1-to-1-to-1 ratio. your base, your compost, and your aeration. So it's got worm castings in it, biochar with root-wise inoculated. It's got pumice, rice holes, sphagnum peat moss. And that was where I struggled, too, was the sphagnum peat moss, because it's hydrophobic, and I just gave this thing this much water. How is it still thirsty? So that was a struggle there.
So you said it's a take-and-bake mix, which is cladmus coot, one-to-one-to-one. So you've got your one part peat you're using for the aeration, using both pumice and rice hulls, and then you've got everything else, worm castings, biochar, like you mentioned, so... pretty straightforward there. And how long does that last you, right? So you got to imagine that there's some nutrition in there. But actually, is there any other additional amendments in there as well for fertilizer?
Yeah, there's, it's the Build a Soil Mineral Kit. Okay. It's got like your basalt and oyster shell, and then the Clactamus coots nutrients. So what he used in his, the kelp, the karanja. So yeah, it's for the first. Run I did, I only would give it, you know, some, I gave it some root-wise at the beginning, and then I would give it some ferments, or I threw in your guys' stash blend. I didn't have any issues. I'm on my second run now, and I'm about week 6 of flower, and I did the same thing. I did re-amend after that first run, which is the Build Soil way. I didn't do no soil test. I gave it your compost, Build a Flower, worm castings, and that pretty much planted right into that and started again, and I'm in week 6 of flower and just giving it treats on the weekend, and it's crushing. So, and I did break down an order of soil tests. I think I am going to get one after the second run just to make sure, you know, I haven't tested my water, so I don't know if I have a sodium buildup or, you know, just to kind of learn the whole process and how you go amending. Which is cool that they offer this now. They have consultants, so you can meet with the soil doctor or Zach Branson and actually work with them and kind of figure out what the soil test is saying, because I've looked them up online, and they are beyond me. They're in depth, definitely.
They have a ton of knowledge. I actually met the soil doctor, Brian Mason, at the Soil Summit not too long ago. Great guy, and he has a ton of knowledge. So soil testing, super important. Water testing is another thing that isn't really talked about enough. And we're going to get into water here in a little bit. But as far as your, when you put in that initial take and bake, eventually the nutrients are going to deplete, right? So when do you put in your first feeding, and what does it consist of?
I stick with the Kraft Blend, the 352. That's just, I think it's 15 of their favorite ingredients that they made work in all in one. And that's pretty much it. You know, as far as top dressing, I do Kraft Blend. If I do a defoliation or a chop and drop, I'll throw some Kashi Blend on there with just a compost accelerator, kind of get everything active and going. But as far as feedings, I just stick to the ferments. I do give a little bit of Build-A-Bloom in the middle of flower, which is a water soluble. I just mix in the chapin and water in. It's got amino acids and... really built on getting calcium, phosphorus, and potassium available. So, but other than feedings, I really don't do much. I do the re-amend water treats on weekend, and that's it. And so far, I've had luck. That's why I think I'm going to get a soil test where I get too deep and realize, oh, man, I just depleted everything. Because Jeremy does talk about, you know, feeding the whole buffet and letting the plant do what it's want, never let it run out, and kind of stay up on top of that balance. So balance is everything when it comes to these organic beds. It really is.
Yeah, I've been using the Kraft Blend for several years, and that's an awesome mix to be able to just use that. I top test every 30 days. Is it every 30 days you're typically doing it, kind of according to the instructions, or are you doing something else in regards to the top dressing of Kraft Blend and other amendments?
Well, I mean, I really don't have a schedule. I think that's one thing that drew me from synthetic to organic was, you know, you see Jeremy dumping the you know, whatever he's feeding it in his hand, he's not even measuring it. He's just going for it. And that's kind of been my mentality. I don't top dress at all during my grow. I simply just water only for the most part, and then re-amend, you know, accordingly, watch the plant, which it stayed green the whole time, so it didn't tell me nothing. So I kind of just, you know, watched a little more content videos from you guys and kind of made my own balanced recipe and re-amended that. And so far, so good.
That's awesome. It sounds like it was pretty hands-off, or a little bit easier than it is working with synthetics, where you're mixing up nutrients, different formula every week. Oftentimes, it's easier to just go water only a lot of the times here with the organics. It sounds like that's what you did for last grow and this grow.
Yes. Yep. And even when I ran the Chill Out OG in the 7 gallons, it was just Buildasaur 3.0, and I watered only. And, you know, added some things on the weekends, and they flourished. So I'm very excited to see them in the 3x3 bed.
That's awesome. Yeah, these soil mixes that are out there that are water only just makes it so much easier. It really does. So let's back up to water. Water source. We talked about a little bit about how important it is, how, you know, a lot of people, I don't say neglect, but they just don't pay attention to as much as really they should. What are you using for a water source? Are you using tap water? Well water? Are you filtering your water? Reverse osmosis? What's your water source?
Well, for my first grow in the big beds, I would just water out of, I ran a hose. Luckily, I have a wash tub down in my basement, which is game changer to be able to wash stuff out that there. But I ran my hose over to my grow room, so I got just a spigot, and I'd fill my buckets up. I had 2 5-gallon buckets, and I let them sit over 24 hours just to dechlorinate and just see if I could rid of anything over that small amount of time. And I really didn't know. I was just guessing. And I'd water the plants, and it crushed. But that recipe is so solid that I think I could have thrown anything at it, and it would have been fine for the time being. Long duration, maybe not so. So I finally broke down, and I got just an RV filter, something I think they siphon out of when they pull it out of the lake or what have you. I'm not sure how they do it, but it's just a filter that I plug into my hose, and it takes the small materials out that I don't want, maybe. But I think a water test is definitely going to be the way to go, just to reassure what I got is going on is good.
Yeah, it can be helpful. I can't even use my tap water here because too much sodium. Sodium bicarbonates comes in a very high pH. It's just not good for plants at all. I've tried using it before, but unfortunately, what it leads to is deficient plants. You know, you have too much sodium in the medium, causes lockouts of other nutrients being uptaken, and it's not good. So I use reverse osmosis, and I've been using that, and I know a lot of some people hate the fact that reverse osmosis is used because of the water waste, right? Some of these systems are 3-to-1. Basically, for every gallon, you're wasting 3 gallons of water. Now, that's not every single system. I don't think a lot of people know this, but I actually just recently upgraded my RO system to the, and I pulled it up here, it's APEC ROES-100, it's the Essence series, and it's a 1-to-1 ratio. So it's for every gallon of water, you're only wasting a gallon of water. Technology is getting better when it comes to filtering and or reverse osmosis. It's important to start with clean water, really, because you can run into issues for sure. I've ran into issues in the past. Some people use well water, which, if you get a test on there, some of the well water comes in high iron, but it really depends on where you live. It's just there's so many different areas that could come out with different things in the water. It's hard to give blanket answers whether or not some of these water sources can be used or not. Same thing with tap, you know, whether or not you can use it, but anyways, I'm rambling on.
It's a good topic. Water can change everything.
Absolutely right, yeah. Kind of relating to this is the moisture content in the medium, right? So using your water, you're watering your plants. How do you monitor the moisture content? You mentioned the EcoWit. Is that what you're using?
Yeah, it's an EcoWit. I didn't start that. I kind of just did the whole Buildasaur method, slap the bed and see if there's weight down there, kind of maybe move my cover crop a little bit and see if there's moisture on top. But then, like I said, I traveled so much for work, and I wasn't about to ask the wife to take care of the 3 kids and go down here and do these steps. So I saw the EcoWit, and I went ahead and bought them for all my beds just for as a reinsurance, and makes my practicing better, you know, because then I can use my gut and not rely on that so much. I'm like, okay, maybe my gut was right. So it really is a game changer for me. It just goes to show that the technology is so advanced now that you don't even have to be home and you can grow plants as long as you have, a partner or somebody that can help you along the way.
That's awesome. Now, are you hand watering or do you have an auto watering system going or what?
Well, I'm kind of doing both right now. I did the blue mat when I was running synthetic and I don't think I had it dialed in properly. three of the plants went good. The other three didn't go so good. And I'm pretty sure it was a moisture reason. Or maybe I got a bubble in the sensor, the carrot. So now with the bigger beds, which I thought about going blue soak, but they're just watered in hand with a Chapin. I water those in, and the 30-gallon that I have in the 3x3 tent, it's a blue mat. And I got it set up properly because she's healthy, she's happy, the reservoir is going down, and it's been awesome. So I kind of been experimenting with the blue mat now that I kind of know more about what I'm doing and what I'm looking for. And that's where the EcoWick came in handy too, because that first watering can be everything. If you don't have that moisture right, you're setting yourself up for failure. So I think that was went a long way with me, you know, being newer to growing, that helped me to have that little cheat to get the moisture right and then realize, okay, this is what it should feel like. This is when I should probably water at this stage. So the blue mat is definitely handy. And like I said, I think eventually I'll try to get a blue soak on the beds just because I travel so much and take a little more off the wife and maybe water some stuff in on the weekends.
I love blue mats. It makes things so much easier as far as dialing in that moisture level. I mean, you don't even need a moisture meter if you have a blue mat system, as long as you have that guess to begin that you think the moisture level is good. You're right. Like you said, if it's too moist and you add in that blue mat, could lead to overwatering symptoms and so on and so forth. But if you add in that blue mat system at the perfect moisture level, it just maintains it and it makes things so much easier. So yeah, I love blue mats. I speak about them too much, actually.
Well, they are. They're for the little technology that's involved. It's, you know, it's, there's no plugging nothing in, and it is there. It's a great system. I'd need to get some of them caps because I now with the cover crop and everything growing up, I didn't see nothing. So when I go in there to kind of maybe chop and drop, I'm worried I'm going to hit that little nozzle and, you know, mess up my settings. So I'm definitely going to get one of those.
How about compost teas? I know a lot of people use those when they're growing with organic inputs. Do you do compost teas at all? If so, how do you use them?
I do. I don't know if I'm doing it right. I very rarely do them. When you guys came out with your stash blend and you know, were kind of advocate that, you know, this would be a good tea, I started doing that. And that's all I really did was some molasses. I ran your stash blend every once in a while, maybe some craft blend and some worm castings, and I'd bubble it for 12 to 24 hours. And that went so both ways as far as timing. You know, some people went 48 hours. Some people said, don't go past 12. So it was kind of, I didn't want to feed something I didn't know what I was doing. So far, so good. And I would love to, you know, dig in more on teas, and because I do think they're beneficial. You know, it's making things readily available, making, you know, giving the sugars to the microbes, and not necessarily, you know, that sweet spot to where you don't just have one microbe, you know, you're dominant taking out the other. You want that sweet spot to where you're getting a little bit of everything, the diversity. So I want to learn more about that and definitely get more into teas.
Yeah, they can certainly be beneficial. And there's, I agree, there's a lot of misinformation or a lot of conflicting information, I guess you could say, where how long you should brew for, how much aeration needs to happen, and so on and so forth. We won't get too deep into compost teas here, but I do have other episodes where people dive deep into compost teas and really break it down, what they do when they're brewing teas, how they brew their teas, and so on and so forth. Now, you talked about sugars a little bit, microbial inoculants. Can you kind of break down how you're using those things?
Well, the inoculants, like I said, I'm using the RootWise, Microbe Complete, the BioFoss, and the Enzyme Elixir to kind of bring those out of dormancy. But that's as far as inoculants. I'm not really getting too far into the sugars. It's still a lot to be learned, obviously. You know, my understanding of sugars is, you know, they are essential, but they're not a necessity, maybe not towards the end of flower. And I could be wrong on that, that they do use more sugars for resin production. But like I said, I wouldn't quote me on that. I'm not sure completely. I'm still a rookie when it comes to you guys. So I'm taking a little bit of time and trying not to overwhelm myself, because organics, when I first saw it, I was like, there is no way. There's no way I can do this. And you just get started and, you know, you learn as you go. And so starting with the right formulas and the right, you know, guidance to the Mr. Growitz and the Jeremy's, and, you know, so it's been a big help watching you guys, because otherwise it's just Google. And, you know, I was back in Indiana trying to just learn about the stuff, and I had a VPN. I was so scared, so no one could track me. So it's been awesome to learn from everybody.
Yeah, and with the sugars and microbial inoculants, a lot of people say, hey, that's kind of an optional thing. You know, you don't need to go out and buy these products and add them in. You can totally get away with just top dressing craft blend, for example, just a fertilizer blend that have all natural or organic inputs. You could totally just get away with that and then water, and that's it. You don't even need to do mulch layers or cover crops, but a lot of people do because it helps with growth, right? Mulch layers, cover crops. Break down what you're doing for those things.
I do the straw mulch. I did the barley straw, the Blue Oyster. I started off with that, and then I just went to Ace and started getting some regular straw. I do use the 12 sieve cover crop from Build a Soil, which that stuff's amazing. There's so much in there, different clovers and flax, and that stuff's gorgeous to grow. Picture that we had in your book, and I had some layovers, so I just had cover crop growing. It just exploded, and there's so much beauty in it. It was awesome to see. But I really do think it helps, you know, protect that rhizosphere, the top few inches of that soil, you know, helps spread moisture throughout the bed. The cover crop is huge when it comes to spreading the moisture, because even if, you know, you give too much water, you have all those little clovers drinking up the water to kind of help you out. And if you're underwater, you can kind of see it in your cover crop, maybe before your cash crop. So I've kind of used that as my moisture cheater too. You know, if the top inch is, you know, nice and moist, I'm pretty sure the below layer is going to be pretty good. So I'm a big advocate of mulch and straw and whatever you can get to cover it up and keep the worms happy and let them come up and take your nutrients and down to them and feed everything. So it's definitely, I would definitely say do straw and mulch.
I agree. Those things are just so helpful, particularly for me living in such a dry climate. You know, my natural humidity, I got it right here actually, 24%.
Oh, so wow.
24% RH is what it is right here. And then my grow room is the next room over here. So I'm always adding in humidity, and being in such a dry climate, the medium dries out very quickly. It can dry out a lot faster, particularly if you have, you know, the lights on and the heat's up and so on and so forth. But having cover crops, using a mulch layer, helps out tremendously for somebody like me who lives in this type of climate. And I use the straw just like you do. I really like the straw. I've used cardboard covers, just using a piece of the cardboard, cutting them down and putting them as a cover. And that acts as a mulch. It's not really breaking down like a mulch does, but it covers the soil, which can certainly have some benefits there as well. And then for the cover crops, I'm usually using the clover. It's a nitrogen fixer, right? So it's actually grabbing nitrogen from the air, converting it to a form that's usable for the plants. Now you need to kill off that cover crop in order to get those advantages, but you get those advantages once you kill off the cover crop. I want to warp back to kind of getting to water a little bit deeper. One thing I forgot to ask you about is pH. Do you monitor the pH of your water going in or monitor the pH in your medium?
I do not. No, I do think that the nutrients and everything are going to decide what the pH of the soil is. I don't think me putting water 6.5 water is going to change my soil to 6.5. I do think that maybe to stay in a good balance, maybe like a 6 to 9 or 10, if it's, that's about where I tried to stay, but I don't even check. When I got here, I did a water test on mine and it was like 7.2. So I was more uncomfortable of, you know, hands off just water. So I do not pH.
Got it. Yeah. You hear about a lot of folks that are growing organic living soil, no-till, whatever style they're doing, not pHing at all, not monitoring the pH, just adding in the water. And I think it really comes down to having a clean water source to begin. You know, there's a lot of controversy on whether or not you should pH, whether or not you should monitor pH when growing with organic inputs. But I really think it comes down to what's your water source to begin. If you have a clean water source to begin, and it's within the proper pH, you're good to go. Now, there are some folks that have very high pH, 8, 9, pH, right? So they are adjusting it just to kind of have that ease of mind. Now, I'm not saying that you can't get away with just adding that in, because the plant does release acids, right, to lower the pH, to make nutrients available. Microbes are creating acids that the pH is being adjusted by the microbes as well. So things are happening within the medium that's adjusting the pH. It's not just the water source going in that's determining what your pH in the medium is. So yeah, I always want to like to ask the pH question for the folks that are growing in living soil to see like whether or not they do adjust the pH, because it's kind of split between people, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think with me leaning on, you know, having a soil test every once in a while, I think it's going to help me to kind of figure out, okay, maybe it ain't the best pH, but it's not affecting anything within the grow.
Now, what about EC? Or some people go by PPM instead in order to get an idea of the nutrition that's in the medium. Are you doing any sort of EC or PPM test, whether it be a slurry test or a runoff test, in order to kind of get an idea of how much nutrition's in the medium?
Nope. Same with pH. I'm kind of hands-off when it comes to the PPMs. When I did the synthetic for a little bit, I would test runoff, and it was mind-boggling the invalid results you'd get. You just didn't know what you were getting. But with organics, we don't water to runoff, so we don't really have any water to test. And with the slurry test, I'm kind of going towards no-till, so being less invasive as possible.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, a lot of organic growers do the same thing that way, so pretty straightforward. Let's get into environment a little bit. I want to dive deeper into temperature, humidity, VPD, CO2, all that good stuff. Let's start with temperature. What do you typically aim for temperature for the different stages of growth?
For the seedling stage, I like to stay in the 76 to 80. I'm in a basement, so it's kind of hard to get the warmer temperatures without sucking your humidity out. So I find a good balance about 75 to 80, and I pretty much ride that same temperature throughout the whole grow. Towards flower, the end of flower, I'll kind of try to stay towards that 75. Sometimes 74, 73 is what I get, and that's fine with me. I haven't noticed any, you know, less growth, and obviously the terpenes have a lot to do with temperature that we're starting to realize, and I feel like the lower temperature is helping me out as far as keeping some terpenes. Other than flower, that's pretty much it, 75 to 80 all the way till the finish the grow.
Now, what about relative humidity? What do you typically aim for the different stages of growth?
Same thing with the temperature. I kind of ride 70. I'll go a little higher when they're seedlings. If I see 75, 80, you know, obviously that's good. I'm not going to try to fight that. But when it comes to vegging, I'm about 65, 70%, and I ride that until week 3 of flower, and then I'll do a 5% decrease as the weeks go on. But I usually typically stay about 50%. With me being in the basement, it's just kind of, you know, you kind of tackle your weakest link. And for me, it was kind of just, okay, don't mess with this too much. Let's just ride this 50%, maybe have some extra fans going in the room. And I haven't had any bad luck with botrytis or mold yet, so I'd like to stick at the 50% if I could. I felt like there wasn't as much drooping for me.
So is 50% like the lowest you go in flower?
Yes. Okay. And I know a lot of people are against that, and I'm asking for problems, and I probably am. But like I said, being in the basement, it's hard for me to get that 45% without sacrificing something else. So with the airflow, and I got intake, outtakes, I got two fans going, one in the middle of the canopy, one on top of the canopy. So far, so good.
I don't have the VPD chart memorized in regards to like the dark green range versus the light green range versus the yellow range, but the numbers you mentioned there seems like they would be either in the dark green range or light green range for VPD. Are you monitoring VPD at all?
Definitely. And that's what I kind of base my temperatures and humidity on, is just to keep that VPD. When I'm in seedling, 0.7, 0.8, I'm okay with, maybe a little lower. That's what I'm shooting for. And then I'll ride that all the way to the end of veg and get to, you know, beginning of flower, maybe 1.2 VPD. But I do try to stay in those parameters on that. I think it's the pulse chart that you use. That's pretty much what I've used most of the time, is kind of staying in that parameters. Every once in a while, I think I creep up to 1.6, 1.7, which is a little too dry for my liking. But it's okay. I think it's in the yellow range or something around there.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the pulse monitor VPD chart right now. And it says for 79 degrees, the dark green range is between 50 and 56. So you're right in the ballpark as far as that. And I think a lot of people, when it comes to lights off, there's some people like, oh, just ignore it. VPD doesn't really matter during lights off. Other people say, oh, it does matter. You absolutely want to still monitor that, right? You can have humidity spikes during lights off. Happens to me all the time.
all the time.
So being able to lower that RH, because your temperature is dropping, right, with lights off. So if you're at a 70 degree, according to this chart, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, well, this is calling the dark green range from 34 to 44% RH. So it's looking for a lot lower of an RH when you have that temperature drop. So VPD chart is definitely something that's pretty interesting. I know some people just ignore it. They can say, hey, the plants are going to grow fine outside of the VPD range, which is absolutely right. You'll definitely be able to get to a harvest. But if you're looking to optimize growth, keep plants healthy, trying to stay within these ranges on the VPD chart is wise.
Well, and that's what's, you know, your spikes. I get the same thing in my tents. And I think that's where the AC Infinity controls have just changed everything, because you can have your fan, you know, up to 10 if you need to when they're off. And, you know, maybe suck some of that humidity out and, you know, have that all on a timer to where it's just all hands off. It does make it easier to control spikes.
So much easier. How about CO2? Are you supplementing CO2 at all?
I did an exhale bag one time and I just didn't really see any huge benefits where I was going to, you know, explain to myself, I'm going to buy this every grow. And like I've seen in your videos, you know, I got 5 cats, 3 kids and a wife, and I'm always down here running around. So, and I always find one cat in the garden. So someone's breathing, and I have a CO2 meter that I have hanging in there, and it's about 350, 400. And then when I get down here, you know, there's a lot of people home, you know, it'll get up to 600, 700, 800, which is mind blowing. So that's kind of how I'm supplementing, is just our own, you know, exhales and CO2.
Pretty straightforward. Yeah, I've tried the exhale bags before, and I have a CO2 monitor as well, so I'm able to kind of see, and it wasn't very consistent. You know, it was up and down. Sometimes they go in there, it'd be 700, 800, 900, sometimes actually reaching 1,000. I was like, oh, this is fantastic. But then other times I'd go in there, and it would just be 500, 600. So it's like, it's very inconsistent, so I stopped using the exhale bags as well. And same thing with the TMB Naturals canisters. Same exact thing, kind of just the inconsistency and the fact that you're supposed to buy a new refill packet every 2 weeks, which can become costly over time, you know what I mean? So I stopped using those ones as well. Let's get into IPM next. So integrated pest management, things to do in order to prevent pests from invading your grow space. What is your IPM routine?
So I try to focus on cycling 3 different ways of going about it. I use the essential oils, which I've kind of had a bad effect on them, but it may have been my own doing. I foliar sprayed when I should have waited a little bit for the lights to go off, and I got some burning, but that was my own doing. I use the essential oils, the EM5 from Build a Soil, and I just got a new one from Petrigrow, the Crop Defender, which I think it's got peppermint oil and an organic emulsifier. And I'm not sure of all the specifics, but there's only 3 or 4 or 5 ingredients in there, and they're all organic, and I just implemented that into my garden. I got my first pest ever was, I believe it was a clover mite, a little round orange-red looking bug, and they started actually making their way up my stalks. So I panicked because I was on the road and I came home and I saw this. So then I hit it with the EM5 and the Crop Defender, and 2 weeks went by and they went away. And then all of a sudden they came back and I hit them with another dose. And that just goes to show I got to stay up on IPM, because if you wait for something to happen, it's too late. Luckily, they didn't make it to the canopy and they were eradicated. I used some ground mustard seed, which I think helps as far as the soil keeping them underneath there. But yeah, I try to implement the rotation of three, and I may switch it up. I've used neem before when I first got the beds and trying to find out the watering. I was overwatering a little bit, so I had a lot of gnats. So I had the traps, and, you know, finally they did eradicate, and, you know, the beds were able to balance themselves out.
I was going to ask you what pests you've kind of come across and how you got resolved them, and you just answered that right there. For the gnats, was it just the neem and the traps, or what?
I use the neem and the essential oils and the EM5 actually all in one.
Okay.
I just went for it all. Because it was bad. You'd open up the tent and they were flying in front of your face. It wasn't just one or two here or there. And I panicked because I just got this balanced soil. What am I doing wrong here? Which, you know, Jeremy says that, you know, starting a new bed, you're going to have gnats. It's just, there's compost, there's, you know, more moisture than, you know, your regular size bed. And, but it, once I sprayed those on there, they went away and it kind of balanced themselves out.
And I assume that you were in the vegetation stage when you were battling that, or were you spraying that stuff while in flower?
No. Yeah, I was in veg, luckily. I'm a long veg or two, kind of just waiting to see for something to happen. And it did, and I eradicated it, luckily. And I did notice one or two after the fact, looking through my jeweler loop for on the trichomes, there was a gnat or two in there, which, you know, is not the end of the world. Especially being the home growing, you know, in a big facility maybe, but for me it wasn't really too big. I like bugs and dirt and stuff.
How often are you actually getting in there and kind of inspecting your plants and looking for pests?
Well, unfortunately, I only can get in there on the weekends. The occasion I will be home during the week, and I do try to dedicate a lot of time here. I'll wake up super early in the morning, kind of get in, get it out of the way. I could do a better job watching for issues. So like last time it kind of, they got up the stock when maybe I could have eradicated it before then. So I do need to do a better job of overseeing my canopies and, you know, finally looking through there and making sure everything's okay.
Yeah. Cause like you mentioned, it can get out of control quick. I mean, when you're talking about the fungus gnats and how out of control it got, I thought about a time where it got out of control for me and it was just so bad. If you're not on top of it, it gets out of control, and then you get frustrated, and then you start getting worried that the plant's not going to get to harvest. So yeah, being on top of it, scouting. I typically go in there every couple days, and I am scouting, looking for pests. I always have the yellow stickies there to make sure, just really as an identifier, right? It's not going to eliminate the population, just having yellow stickies in there, but at least you're able to see if they're there. And then take action from there. So is there anything else that you feel like we need to know or the audience needs to know about keeping plants healthy when growing with organic inputs?
Just trust your gut and stay balanced. Less is more with everything when it comes to organics. You don't want to overdo it. The soil is going to take care of itself, especially if, like I said, if you started balanced and you're staying on top of watering, moisture, and making sure everything's in the right place. I think... you're crushing organics. Like I said, I travel all the time for work. I'm hardly home. And if you follow me on Instagram, you see the plants, and it's just, it really is. If you got the right equipment and the right mentors, like Mr. Grow It himself, you can crush too.
I think that's some really good advice. Yeah. Like I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, I'm looking at your Instagram and you're crushing it, man. So great job. Definitely keep up the good work. I knew you grew a lot of the Chilo Dojis. How many of those have you grown out so far?
This will be 8 or 9. And I kind of did a little pheno picking right off the rip, just how they were growing structure wise and ridding off the males, which was the hardest thing I've ever done. I've always been a feminized grower. So when I, you know, ran yours, like, ah, man, I cannot kill this plant, but I just don't have the room or the time right now to go down that rabbit hole. So, it's been a great plant. Everybody loves it. And so it's been an honor to work with you and talk with you and, you know, get your feedback. You know, that helps me in my garden make, you know, I'm doing things okay for the most part.
Yeah, you're doing a fantastic job, man. The pictures you submit are just incredible. I mean, the frost that you're able to pick up in these pictures, the stacking on the nodes, and just...
Well, I got to give my wife credit some too. She is the photographer during the week. She'll send me pictures and then I'll turn them into something on Instagram. So she's an amazing photographer too. She knows what I like. So she's been great.
Well, they came out awesome. And yeah, looking forward to continuing to watch your grows on Instagram. I'll have a link to your Instagram down in the YouTube description section below. But tell the audience other ways they can find you besides Instagram, if any. And is there anything upcoming in the future that you want to talk about?
I pretty much have the Mechanibus Luke social media. My partner Canimat Creations and I started a business with my dad called Soil Plus EDU. You can find us on Instagram as well. But as far as things coming up, we got the Growers Gauntlet, which I'm pretty excited for, Team Grow It. And I'm actually joining my first competition here in Michigan, the Michigan Gems and Genetics Cup. And I will be entering the Branson's Royal Revenge into that, which is, I think the turn-in date's 420, which it worked out perfect because the crop out and the time and the cure, you know, you don't want to have something that's been sitting on the shelves and go enter into a competition. So the timing was perfect, and I'm anxious but excited to just be a part of the community and kind of meet new people. And I'm supposed to be meeting Madman Plant in a Nikon over in Chicago sometime this year. So I'm excited to get out and maybe run into you at a show and, you know, work together and all that. It's been exciting, man.
Good luck on your submission, man, Renan. Hopefully you win that one. And yeah, Grower's Gauntlet, you mentioned that, which is, might as well talk about that for a second, is really, it's an event where you enter in, you join a team, and then you submit pictures on your grow, and then a winner is picked in August, I believe the winner is picked, and then the winner actually gets a trip to Humboldt to actually be with the Humboldt crew and actually tour their outdoor area. And so I'm looking forward to that. That's in September. But if you are tuned into this and want to join the Growers Gauntlet, you have until April 20th in order to officially join. Just go to growersgauntlet.com, and then you'll basically join the Discord, and there's all the information that you need about that. And yeah, join my team, Team Grow It.
Team Grow It.
So yeah, lots of different things you need to do in order to keep plants healthy throughout the grow, win organic gardening. I mean, we covered nutrition, we covered the environment, we covered pests. I'm sure there's a lot of other things we can get into, you know, lighting, and the conversation could go on. And maybe there's a part two that comes up in the future between us, the things that we forgot. What did we forget? Let us know down in the comment section below. We'd love to know what other things we should talk about and expand upon when it comes to using organic inputs and keeping plants healthy throughout the entire grow. I think there's a lot more to the conversation than what we just had here. And I'd love to read about it here in the comment section. So, well, Luke, thanks so much for coming on, man. Fun conversation. I love these chill conversations, just talking shop and just seeing how you do things and keeping plants healthy. And I think it's valuable for the audience to hear about some of this stuff. I appreciate your time. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
It's been a blast. Thanks, Chris.
Peace out, everyone. Catch you in the next episode.